After the enormous success of the snow show this year, presented outside at the Arboretum, we looked at how we could include this idea for a season inspired by classical texts and looked to the Renaissance as to what was inside that spoke to snow. And one of my favorite writers of this period is the great Thomas Dekker. And Dekker was a contemporary of Shakespeare's. He was a very, very popular writer and in some ways rivaled Shakespeare for popularity. Mm-hmm. Unlike Shakespeare, he wrote plays set in London at his time. And he wrote a form of play called a city comedy, of which The Shoemaker's Holiday might be his most celebrated, in which a shoemaker runs for the mayor of London and is titled to get it and gets it and is blessed by the queen. And he wrote a play called The Roaring Girl about Moll Cutpurse, a famous pickpocket, and her adventures. And he was the author or collaborator, had his hand in almost 70-some plays, which is twice as many as Shakespeare. He's also as famous for his playwriting, famous for his in and out of the debtor's jail. Mm-hmm. The poor guy was in debtor's prison for, I think,
seven years
during his life. And some say for debts that he didn't incur. And some also propose that debt was a good catch-all for mm-hmm. many things. But it was a very capricious time, a very fickle time. He fell in and out of favor. So one season he is the most popularly attended play in London. The next year he's in jail. The next year he's writing what's called a pamphlet for the coronation of James I. And pamphlets were printed leaflets that, I guess, like short stories or like reporting, not unlike a newspaper today, would cover a single subject and were widely distributed and used. And pamphlets is the sort of 17th century term for sort of, I guess, prose fiction and reporting. And one of the pamphlets that Dekker is attributed to is one called The Great Frost of 1608. And we thought, hey, there's a 400th birthday worth celebrating, and the Great Frost is something we know about. So we're going to stage the snow show indoors. It's going to be in the studio theater, but without giving too much away, and a great nod to the machinery of Inigo Jones and the Elizabethan scene decorators that loved doing mm-hmm. special effects. It's going to snow, I promise you. It'll mm-hmm. be snowing inside. And we're going to stage Thomas Dekker's pamphlet, The Great Frost of 1608. I know you love Thomas Dekker mm-hmm. too, David. And what is it about Dekker that appeals to you?
Well, it's similar to Hooker the dog and Falstaff. It's Dekker for me. He's my favorite writer of the Elizabethan period, simply because he captures an aspect of that society that isn't Shakespearean. Mm-hmm. It's not in Spenser. It's not even in the anger and the innovations of a Marlowe. It's Dekker just has a sheer love for the ordinary life. Yes. And for the majority and the illiterate and the working men and, you know, the women and even the children who are just living their lives and struggling to make ends meet and doing everything they possibly can. So he, Shoemaker's Holiday is a wonderfully funny, it's a hysterical play. It's actually the first play I ever saw when I moved to London in 1979. It was the first London play I saw. It's a breathtaking, amusing play. And the way the husband, you know, verbalizes his wife but loves her dearly is just, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you not love a play where the servant is called Bum Trinket? You know,
Sicily Bum Trinket.
Silly, but yeah, it's but. Dekker did write an awful lot of pamphlets and was known as much for his pamphlets. And the pamphlets are these very short pieces of work that aren't bound. They may be stitched, but they're usually just folded. And they're sold by peddlers known as chapmen in the 18th century. just chapbooks, which are very small, very cheap. They might be a penny, halfpenny. They might be 3 pennies if they're a bit longer. And these would include almanacs. They would include little stories about, you know, the triumphs of such and such a hero, like mythical hero, like Guy of Warwick. Mm. Or if there was a deformed calf born in Warwickshire in the village that suddenly someone would churn out one of these things. They would churn out little woodcuts as well to put on these. We explained what a woodcut was earlier. And so there's little pictures, and there's a wonderful one of the Great Frost. I'll come back to that in a second. But these, they're usually, sort of like the National Enquirer of our day, you know, these little cheap pamphlets of wonderful stories that would just be tossed. And it's very sad that we've lost most of them, because they are ephemeral literature. There are things, I mean, literally we have stories in the 18th century where they're using them as toilet paper, and because they're just cheap things to be tossed away. We're lucky that someone like Samuel Pepys, who with his wonderful diary also happened to collect these things, and he bound them and put them in his library, and that's one of the reasons why we have some of these. But Dekker wrote some wonderful ones on plague. He was very concerned with the things that affected ordinary Londoners. The plague visited London almost every year. Sometimes it was very severe, sometimes it was mild. But he wrote on the plague, and his real hate day for the pamphlets in the first decade of James's reign. And on the plague, he writes about, steals mercilessly from other authors, earlier authors, on what are called the coney catching pamphlets. So he writes things like Candlelight and Lanterns and Candlelight, which is about, or the bellman of London, who is the night watchman. So what does the night watchman see at night in London? And boy, the stories that he tells you of what the watchman sees, or what does the lantern see? What do you see by London by lantern light? What does the city reveal of itself? And this is usually about the vagabonds and the stories of thefts and what is going in the bedrooms and so on. I mean, it's just very, very funny, as well as very, very exciting. And the Great Frost is part of those. This huge frost that hits London in 1603, where the Thames freezes over. And it's a wonderful device that, again, we mentioned earlier, where the country man, the old man of the country, hears the story that the Thames is frozen over, and he visits London and meets a young city man. So you have the country versus the city, but it's not about corruption and the good country versus the nasty city. This is about learning about each other. And they trade stories about poverty, about starvation, about how people are getting firewood. How do they get coals in London? How do they get firewood in the winter in the country? About people who are losing their lives. A wonderful story. But there's amusing things. There's a wonderful story about a man with his two dogs who goes out, and he's, you know, striking his shoulders. He's better and braver than everybody else. So he goes out a little bit too far, and an ice floe breaks off. And he's on this little ice floe, and he's by himself with the two hunting dogs. And Dekker moralizes about, you know, now he wishes he wasn't, you know, he's remembering all his hawking and hunting with these dogs. And the ice floe drifts around, and he races around and can't get anywhere on it. Finally, it gets to one of the arches of the tower. One of the arches of the London Bridge, and he's able to scramble out with the two dogs, and he's fine. But there's several little stories like that about what it was like. People selling wine, people, the watermen who lose their trade because they can't row the boats up, actually cut a channel across the Thames so they can get a bit of trade that way. There's one in a very short pamphlet. It takes you an hour to read it. You know, there's wonderful stories. But again, this makeup of a pamphlet is wonderful. This is a wonderful example of that, because in 1614, I think 1615, there was another. It wasn't a frost, but it was a snow.
A deep snow.
So then another pamphlet comes out saying instead of the Great Frost, it's the Great Snow. And most of the bits that Dekker had written for the Great Frost simply get lifted completely and put back into this pamphlet. So you read the same stories with a few others that he's heard about, you know, two men who leave London and get lost in the woods because there's so much snow, they get snow blind and one of them dies. There's a few added stories there. But the nicest thing about the second pamphlet, which I think we'll try and get an image of it somewhere. There's a snowball fight. There's these two men in Elizabethan Jacobean costume who are throwing snowballs at each other, and there's people digging their cow out of the snow and so on. So that one at least has a nice woodcut. Unfortunately, the Great Frost itself doesn't have a woodcut, and so we don't have any illustrations of the man on the ice floe with his dogs. But it's that love of life and those little stories, those little tiny stories that make up our lives and is the joy of our lives. That's what Decca reveals, the day-to-day minutiae of life, which is the richness of the human existence. And
you know, it's said that history is recorded by the victors and stuff. And so often when we look at history, we look at what kings were doing and popes were doing and soldiers are doing, but it was so terrific in Decker's giving a sense of just how people lived, what they ate, what their fashion sense was. And when this Great Frost came to London, it was a real celebration in the whole city. I mean, it unified the South Bank to the main core of
the
city. And there were bonfires on the ice and cellars and all of that. It's fantastic. And there are gorgeous engravings from the period of people ice skating. Mostly it's pictures of people falling down ice skating, and the skates from the period were sort of a long curly, you know, like you see on elf shoes or the upturned toes of Alibaba. It's that kind of shape that would be strapped right onto their shoes, and off they would go. And skating also appears in a lot of proverbs of the time, of being on a slippery world, on a wayward world, being life open to chance and fortune, rather than being dictated by a sense of destiny or
I wonder when skating on thin ice came into
It might be very vogue. Well from this period. The other big source for the snow show, in addition to Decker, is the music book of John Playford. And John Playford, his most famous book is called The Dancing Master. And his other is called Hang Up Sorrow and Care. And what they are, they're catches and tunes, songs. Nothing so highfalutin as a madrigal, but rounds about daily life. And we sang some of those in the Ark last year and at the presentation, and we're so excited by them, what they contributed to and revealed about domestic and daily life, that we thought this would be great. And so the five performers that are going to do this show, which will be mostly told the stories of the Great Frost through song, using these traditional airs and catches and rounds from John Playford, who will also accompany themselves on period instruments.
Right.
So we're going to have the triple threat of, well, quadruple threat of skating, singing, acting, and playing an instrument all at the same time.
So are you going to hand out the pamphlets? Pamphleteers, the printers of those, and the chapbooks also sold broadside ballads on one sheet. Are you going to be passing out ballads
we'll
to the
ballads,
audience?
Ballads, sheets, and chestnuts, and all of that stuff for sale. And one of the things we really wanted to explore is, you know, the history of children's life. And the snow show is a real favorite with families. And we wanted to look at this period from a child's eye. And it's really tough researching this, because basically the Elizabethans, Jacobeans believed children were undeveloped adults. And it's not till much later that children are really honored with a culture of their own. But we do know a little bit about it. Is there a little bit?
We don't know a lot. I mean, part of the problem is as you say, what we know about children largely comes from a whole literature called the Conduct Book, which are books that we'd be very familiar with today on how it's sort of keep it simple, stupid, or how to do this sort of book on how to behave yourself. And there are things like, you know, when you're at the dinner table, do not wipe your nose on your hand, or, you know, do not wipe it on the napkin that you're wiping your hands on, or, you know, do not fart at the table. These instructions to children on how to behave. But those are obviously books written by adults for children. And it's very almost impossible to get a sense of how children experience their lives beyond this lens that comes from the adult. In pictures, we see that, you know, boys are wearing skirts till they're six or seven, and then they're breeched and they get to wear their pants. But they're often portrayed in paintings as little adults, really. The conduct books tell us how they should behave. We occasionally get reports of children being punished, but you know, we really don't know how they played, how, you know, we get a few stories about ball games and that sort of thing. But there's a very good book to be written about children in this period to try and uncover that history. You're talking about the history of winners. Well, I guess adults are big winners. I don't know.
Yeah, but absolutely.
We do know people loved their children. What used to be an idea that adults were cavalier about their children's lives. But when we read the diaries and we read the letters, backwards and forwards, both children, there's a wonderful story I was reading a little while ago of a young man who meets his sister, and they go to their parents' grave in the 1650s or 1660s, this is, and they start weeping in their grave. They loved their parents. And we also get in diary entries, Ralph Jocelyn, very famous diarist from the mid-century, who remembers the death of his children years later and weeps about them and loves them and devotes, when you do the calculations of his diary, he devoted almost a third of his income anyway to the futures of his children. You know, these Wow. are very, so they loved their children. I don't agree with some of the historians who argue that there's a coldness and a calculatedness about parental and child relations. So I think it would be wonderful to see how children are portrayed in this, but also how children Yeah. relate to it. And perhaps the only way into this is to how children attending this experience it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we certainly love children. And you know, it's a really important thing to, when you imagine a historical time, to think about these. Mm-hmm. You know, the actors ask the best question.
Yeah.
You know, when I did a production of The Duchess of Malfi, you know, when we were in full farthingales and everything, and what we had to coordinate was with a cast with, you know, 12 women in it. Okay, when they got into costume, who would go to the washroom when? Because
right.
it was an elaborate procedure.
Right.
And so the great questions are, how did they go to the bathroom?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Because that's an aspect of life that, you know, Shakespeare didn't always chronicle in his right. plays with as much detail as we know about how they worshipped or legislated themselves or governed mm-hmm. kings. This is a play that looks at how people endured hard weather, how they survived, and what the great traditions of English folk culture are, what a great contribution they made to yeah. the great classical plays as well.
Mm-hmm.